So Aaron and I had the great fortune of being able to go and listen to Desmond Tutu on Saturday night.
Where?
MJC. Yes. Just for the evening, is from what I understood. It was something that was open to the faculty, staff, I think students, family, and friends. But it was not a publicly announced event. So if you knew someone who was at MJC who had tickets, that was kind of the in. And I guess they opened it to the public at the last minute or something. I saw something about that, but I didn't see any kind of advertising about that. It's too bad that they didn't. Because I know a few people mentioned that there were open seats that could have been utilized.
I have a friend who works there. Her job is in jeopardy now, however, because of budget stuff. But we have a mutual friend who knows as much as we. So it's kind of nice knowing somebody who knows him.
Yeah, that's great.
Some of the private stuff after the big event.
Nice. So his talk that night was on the topic of Ubuntu, which is a Banta word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so one definition of that is, I am what I am because of who we all are. And that's actually a translation by a woman by the name of Lema Gbowee. I hope I pronounce it properly. She's a Liberian peace activist, and she's a mother of six, and she was a social worker who organized the Women of Liberia Mass Action for Peace. And paraphrasing Desmond Tutu, he said that we cannot be human alone. We need to be in relationship with other humans in order to be human. So that really resonated with me. And I wanted to speak about how that relates to our practice, how it relates to the Buddha's teachings, and about how mindfulness can inform us about how we are in relationship with the world. In our practice, on the mat or in the chair, mindfulness is about remembering to see things clearly as they are, moment by moment, without the filter of our habits and conditioning, without coloring our experience with concepts and ideas, to see without the obscuration of our own preferences, prejudices, and bias. So some of you have heard this story, but a few of you haven't, so I'm going to say it again, and hopefully you won't mind the retelling of it. So a young couple moves into a new neighborhood. The next morning while they're eating breakfast, the young woman sees her neighbor hanging the wash outside. "That laundry is not very clean," she said. "She doesn't know how to wash correctly. Perhaps she needs better laundry soap." Her husband looked on but remained silent. Every time her neighbor would hang her wash to dry, the young woman would make the same comments. About a month later, the woman was surprised to see a nice clean wash on the line. and said to her husband, "Look, she's learned how to wash correctly. I wonder who taught her." The husband said, "I got up early this morning and cleaned our windows." And so it is with life. What we see when watching others depends on the purity of the window through which we look. So when we're on the cushion, we practice over and over again to meet each moment as it arises in our experience. In each moment, we have to let go completely in order to be present with this moment. Without wanting or needing it to be any different than it is. If we don't completely let go, there's still something left that obscures the moment. So it's not easy. But the process of looking closely at our experience also helps us to begin to see what is on our windows. We begin to notice if the windows are covered or if they're dirty, and how it changes the view of our world. The laundry is just as it is. But it's the windows that make it different. The windows give it a color of being judged as good or bad, clean or dirty. So how often do we apply things like value judgments on our experience just because of certain concepts or ideas that we hold in our minds? Two people can experience the same thing, maybe loud music, and depending on their preferences and their bias, one person may say, "Wow, that's great." And another person may say, "Oh, that's horrific, and why is this music so loud and obnoxious?" So mindfulness helps us to tease that apart. It helps us to see that it's just an experience of hearing sound with a quality of pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. And we can also see if there's an attachment to wanting to push it away or wanting more of it or just ignoring it. Or just allowing it to be. So, can we notice the bias? Can we notice the quality of the window? How often do we create separation or division from other people because of how they appear to us through our dirty windows? I really like the Tibetan word gom, which they use for meditation, for their word for meditation. It means to become familiar with. And that's what we do in meditation. We become familiar with being human. What is it like to be a human being? We become familiar with the breath, the body, and all of the myriad sensations of breathing, of having a body. And we also become familiar with emotions and how they're felt in the body, We can become familiar with mind states, the activity of the mind, and finally awareness itself and the quality of awareness. In that process, we also begin to see that our experiences are not unique, that all human beings can experience that whole spectrum of sensations. Being born in a human body allows us to feel those things, to experience those things. We all know what it's like to experience anger, fear, irritation, joy, happiness, love, grief, sadness, desire. The Buddha said in his teachings many times, within this very fathom-long body, with its perceptions and inner sense, lies the world, the cause of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that leads to the cessation of the world. And I believe as we begin to see how universal our suffering is and how we all wish to be free of suffering, that it's just a natural development for us to also begin to see the suffering of others and to feel the resonance of that suffering within ourselves. It becomes difficult for us as our practice matures to hold ill will towards others because it causes suffering within ourselves. So the Buddha said it this way in the Metta Sutta, and this is a different translation. It's by Andy Olinsky. Whatsoever living beings exist, without exception, whether weak or strong, whether tall and large, middle-sized or short, whether very subtle or very gross, whether visible or invisible, dwelling far away or not far away, whether born already or not yet born, may all beings be happy in themselves. Let no one work to undo another. Let no one think badly of anyone. Either through anger or with violent thoughts, one should not wish suffering on others. Just as a mother would watch over her son, her one and only son, with her life, in just the same way develop a mind unbounded toward all living creatures. Develop a mind of loving kindness unbounded toward the entire world, above and below, and all the way round, with no holding back, No loathing, no foe. And Bhante Gunaratana, who wrote the book Mindfulness in Plain English, says that there's also a practical reason for wishing and treating others with kindness. He says, if all your enemies are well, happy, and peaceful, they would not be your enemy. If they are free from problems, pain, suffering, affliction, neurosis, psychosis, paranoia, fear, tension, anxiety, etc., they would not be your enemies. Your practical solution toward your enemies is to help them to overcome their problems so you can live in peace and happiness. In fact, if you can, you should fill the minds of all your enemies with loving kindness and make all of them realize the true meaning of peace so you can live in peace and happiness. The more they are in neurosis, psychosis, fear, tension, anxiety, etc., the more trouble, pain, and suffering they can bring to the world. If you could convert a vicious and wicked person into a holy and saintly individual, you would perform a miracle. Let us cultivate adequate wisdom and loving kindness within ourselves to convert evil minds into saintly minds. So Desmond Tutu's expression of this was that we are different precisely so that we should know our need of one another. He also said, all kinds of things have gone horribly, badly wrong whenever we have flouted this fundamental law of our interdependence, of our connectedness, of our harmony, of complementarity, of sharing and of caring. If we don't live our lives with Ubuntu, we have had it. So I was pleasantly surprised. I sent a request and I got permission from Sam Pierstorf, who read the poem. And so I'm going to read the poem that he read Saturday night. It was very beautiful. It was written and read for Desmond Tutu on Saturday night. And this is an Ubuntu poem in three parts. You've seen him at the... Oh, this is part one, sorry. Let me back up. This is part one. You've seen him at the red light on the corner of heartbreak and despair, plucking his guitar, a B.B. King riff buzzing around your closed window like a wasp you want to keep out. His guitar case is wide open like a screaming mouth, nickels inside like shiny teeth. You wonder how long he can keep playing on these cold nights. But you have never asked. Your light is green. Your home is waiting for you. How human can we really be if we don't use our ears to listen to the blues that play on the corners of so many streets? Ubuntu, a person is a person through other persons. We are dominoes falling around the world like a roller coaster, and we fight against those who push us down instead of reaching out to those who have already fallen. Part two. You've seen her at the bus stop, the single mother wrapped in ripped blankets, her toddler asleep on the metal bench as bullets of rain rattle the glass walls that keep them dry. For a moment, you consider the empty seats in your car, the trunk that could fit her stroller. You're both going in the same direction, but in two entirely different ways. How useless have our eyes become for only seeing what we want? The glow of a new iPad, the sky blue swimming pool you hope to dive into this summer, or the savings account. Always the savings, the savings, the savings. But who will you save with the money you keep? Ubuntu. A person is a person through other persons. We are gravity, bound by our feet to this earth, to each other. You can try to float or fly away in your private jet, but even airplanes come down eventually on runways or engulfed in flames. Part three. Count your fingers like blessings. We're lucky to have hands to hold our Gucci purses, our money in a fist so tight a crowbar couldn't pry our fingers apart. But these are the same hands that can pull a man onto his feet or hug a boy who has lost his father. These are the palms that are raised in class. The world is full of questions, and we need teachers to answer them. We are interconnected, and knowledge is the only shackle that can't be unbroken. But when you cut education, every student bleeds. Ubuntu. A person is a person through other persons. So your choice is simple. Be there for someone, or let someone be there for you. If you choose solitude, you choose death, and we are already dying without you. Instead, lift us up. Turn over every stone, every couch cushion. Do not give up until you find hope, and then deliver it to the hopeless. One ray of light, one handful of love at a time. Only then will you know what it means to be a person, what it means to be alive. That touched me so deep. So our Buddhist practice is to look within, to investigate how we are in relationship to our experience of the world. That is where freedom lies. And so looking within, I think we need to also find Ubuntu there. To see who we are in relationship to the many faces of who we are. Accepting all we are in the light of mindfulness, without judgment, with kindness and compassion, because it is our relationship with who we are. If we're struggling with who we think we should be, or fighting inside with how we see ourselves, we come face to face with suffering. The person we turn away from on the street is merely a reflection of that part of us we wish to deny. If we're at peace, holding with kindness all of the many facets of ourselves, the parts we don't like with the parts we do, we become whole. We become fully alive. When we can embrace the difficult within ourselves with acceptance, honesty, and truth, we can then embrace others with acceptance, kindness, and compassion, because we know them as ourselves. We merely reflect the awareness of this truth into the external world. Nothing more needs to be done. But we have to do the work within first. How we are in the world is merely a reflection of how we are within. So I had one last poem to read. And I think it fits nicely. You've heard it before, but it's the poem by Naomi Shihab Nye on kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. So we meet ourselves in the world, and we can meet each other in the world. A person is a person through other persons. How do we see clearly to see that the suffering of the world is also inside? And in meeting that, we can open our hearts with compassion. So thank you.
Thank you.
Are you able to get copies?
Make copies
of the poem?
Yeah. I'd like the copy.
I think so. Yeah.
Of both of the poems. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll check with Sam and see if he's okay with me posting it on the web.
I thought about contacting him because it was in my head afterwards. You know, he did a fabulous job with it, and I just really wanted to meet him again,
yeah.
Like you did tonight. So that was a
real
treat for me.
Mm. Yeah, it was very powerful for me, mm-hmm. and just really resonated. And he was very courageous to write it.
And to perform it.
And to perform it, yeah. Yes.
Can you read the Dominoes line again? I missed it both times. I heard it. Is it part two? The last sentence, maybe.
Oh, actually, it's just before part two. It's the end of part one. We are dominoes falling around the world like a roller coaster. And we fight against those who push us down instead of reaching out to those who've already fallen. And I think, you know, one of the really important parts about Ubuntu is understanding that, you know, we're one race. I think mm-hmm. he mentioned that. Mm-hmm. And it's the human race. It's not different races. And we have one home, which is the earth. And I think the problem is that we tend to forget that we only have one earth. You know, sometimes I think of it like an aquarium. And if we pollute the aquarium, you know, even if it's only one part of the aquarium, it affects the whole aquarium. And we're not so different. You know, we allow appearances, we allow concepts, we allow ideas to separate us. We allow names to divide us. You know, just in the naming, something becomes separate. And if we look within, you know, we do that to ourselves too. You know, there's that part that we don't like, or many parts that we don't like. And we want to cut it off, or we somehow want to push it away, instead of realizing that that's part of this being. Is there a way that we can embrace it and see it with kindness and compassion? To, as Bhante Ji said, you know, change that neurosis and psychosis and instead teach it how to be healthy and well. Can we incorporate it? And I think Desmond Tutu, when he said about the differences, that we all have differences, but they are complementary. They help us to be whole as opposed to being separate. That if we see differences not as something bad, but differences as something that helps us to be even more full, there's so much more room, so much more space.
I also like the way he wove the issues about pollution and the warming of the earth into all of that about being human and caring for the earth.
Right.
Caring for the earth. And how big their carbon footprints are, all these millions and billions of people in the world.
Yeah.
We only have one planet, and we're almost done for with that.
So we, you know, we can't pretend that we only have this little spot that's ours. Right? Because we all share the air that we breathe. We actually share the air that the Buddha breathed many, many thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. It's been recycled many times. But we forget that we just have one atmosphere. We can't just say, oh, I'm only breathing this chunk of air. Right?
Or just concerned with this.
And I think that we live in a time that has a lot of potential because we suddenly can experience things that are happening across the globe so quickly. Whereas, you know, less than 50 years ago, it might take hours or days to get the information, or even longer. Right. And now, you know, things that are happening in Libya, or things that are happening in the Mideast, or in Burma, or in Asia, or wherever it might be, can be broadcast so quickly. Right here.
In your state. 12 hours to China.
Yep. But news can travel instantaneously, you know. Or, you know, hearing about the disaster in New Zealand with the earthquake. You know, all of that shows us how connected we can be.
Tahoe a few years ago and up in the mountains and talked to somebody, I'm not sure who it was. All of us buy a lot of Chinese goods. And they pointed out that at that particular time, this was in the summer in June, that I think 20% of the pollution that was coming into the Tahoe area was from particular coal burning factories in China.
Right. Because the trade winds come from China.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we buy their stuff and we also breathe their smog that they're using their factories making the stuff that we buy.
Okay.
We're all that connected.
But we also are very high polluters.
Yes, oh yes.
So you can't just point to one. Yes.
Well, that gives me hope because I thought the internet, other than making me really exhausted, it's done good for accessing information, but a lot of times it ends up being more. And then the way you just put it, I'm like, oh, maybe it will save us all. Maybe it had to be.
You know, everything can be dangerous.
Right.
And everything can be helpful. It's like a two-edged sword. It's just in how it's used.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so mindfulness can hopefully help us to discern what's skillful and what's not, what's being used in a dangerous fashion or in a skillful fashion. So that's why we do this practice. That's another topic, because that was another possible topic for tonight that I had considered talking about, was the inundation of our lives with information and stimulus. But I think I'll save that. But it is very important. It's something that's very unique, what we're doing, what we did tonight. I think I read something recently about students, that there are a few schools that are actually setting aside a space for people to like unplug and be quiet and silent. And the fact that we spent time together in silence and meditation is very rare, at least in the West. When you think about how plugged in people are today. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's that very empowerment, I think, that we're seeing in the Middle East that's allowing people to feel a sense that they can question the kinds of oppressive governments that they've had for too long and do something about it. How that evolves is the next question, but at least they're empowered by this kind of connectivity.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, yes, yeah, it's both sides. But we're the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting that that has a lot of press, and yet there are other places in the world that don't get the press. For example, in Burma.
Yeah.
Aung San Suu Kyi's been under, or she was under house arrest for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There have been atrocities there with the monks in Burma being, you know, abused and killed and tortured.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that the world hasn't rallied up for that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're more than happy to rally up because it has to do with oil. Right. So it's interesting to know that, yeah, you know, we can we can certainly use media in different ways. But there are a lot of different civil rights abuses in the world that don't get the play. You know, I was looking, I almost wanted to do a talk tonight because today is International Women's Day. And I thought, oh, I should do something about that. And then decided that was a big project. But, you know, I came across this one, they were highlighting various, you know, women that were around the world. And there was a woman that they highlighted from Thailand, and she was speaking about, you know, there's a huge sex slave trade or slave trade in Thailand. Mm-hmm. You know, that the women can fall into, and yet nothing's being done about it, or very little, and very little publicity is made about that. You know, there are I know that of some projects in Africa of funding women, giving women money, because they found that if they teach the women and they educate the women,
yes,
the community improves, yep, the community changes. So there's lots of things going on that, you know, sometimes doesn't get much press. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one poster they were giving out, and I can't remember the wording exactly, but it says something along the lines of to do your little piece where you are, and all of that together is what overwhelms the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty
good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we really can't necessarily change things from afar, but if each one of us does the work and is a kinder person, that ripples out. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just imagine that if everyone took up one of the precepts of, like, not harming, it'd be huge. Mm-hmm. Right? Or not taking what's not given. That's really huge. Because actually, the way nations have come into being, the way countries have come into being, has been through the taking of what's not been given by other people. Right? They've come into other countries, other lands, and literally said, this is ours. Yep. We need it. Yep. Right? You know, just one little change could be so powerful. You know, if everyone took a precept of not lying.
Wow.
Particularly politicians. But, you know, it's when we meet each other one-on-one, there's no issue. It's when we say, I'm from a tribe, my tribe, my family, that we run into difficulty. And so we can propagate decades, centuries, thousands of years of warfare, because we hold on to an idea about my tribe, my country, my land, my ideas, my concepts, my religion. But each one of us has the opportunity to change how we are. You know, it's we reflect what's out there. So if there's no place in our heart for ill will, how wonderful. Because everyone we come in contact with doesn't experience ill will when they're in our presence. And maybe that experience impresses someone to go, what a wonderful way to live. I want to do that too. It's like hearing Sam's poem and saying, wow, it really touched me. There's a resonance and it radiates. So each one of us has the potential to affect lots of change around us. And there are, I don't know how many, thousands, hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many people are out there practicing meditation, practicing mindfulness, practicing the precepts. But that's something really good in the world. And we forget that. So once in a while, it's nice to come back and focus on all of the good things, all of the good seeds that are being planted. To really notice, wow, there's goodness in the world, too. And we can plant more seeds. So I think that's worthy. Because we can't necessarily go to Burma or Africa. Maybe some of us can. And Jeff will talk about that when he comes. But we can do our little part here. And every little bit adds a drop into the bucket. And as Gil would say, drop by drop, the bucket gets spilled. So how about if we sit for a minute and then maybe we'll do some chanting. You must see how this could be you. How he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore.